Сева,
Ом намо Бхагавате Васудевая. Ом намо Бхагавате Васудевая.
Ready from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, the Song of the Avanti Brahmana. Text number, what is the text number? 23. Vaga pavaga yo dvaram. Prapya lokam mimam puman. Dravine konu shajeta. Martyo nartasya dhamani. Svarga of heaven, apavargayaho, and liberation, dvaram, the gateway, prapya, achieving, lokam, the human life, imam, this, puman, a person, dravine, to property. Kaha, who, anushajita, will become attached, marchaha, prone to death, anartasya, of worthlessness, dhamani, in the realm. What mortal man, having achieved this human life, which is the very gateway to both heaven and liberation, would willingly become attached to that abode of worthlessness, material property? Translation after me. What mortal man, having achieved this human life, which is the very gateway to both heaven and liberation, would willingly become attached to that abode of worthlessness, material property. Purport, that which one intends to use for one's personal sense gratification is called material property. Whereas paraphernalia to be used in the Lord's loving service is understood to be spiritual. One should give up all one's material property by utilizing it completely in the devotional service of the Lord. A person who owns a luxurious mansion should install the deity of the Lord and hold regular programs to propagate Krishna consciousness. Similarly, wealth should be used to build temples of the Lord and publish literature scientifically explaining the personality of Godhead. One who blindly renounces material property without utilizing it in the service of the Lord does not understand that everything belongs to the personality of Godhead. Such blind renunciation is based on the material idea that this property could belong to me, but I don't want it. Everything in fact belongs to God. Knowing this, one neither tries to enjoy nor to reject the things of this world, but peacefully engages them in the service of the Lord. Om Jnanate Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Tapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripata maham vande sri gunam dinatarinam. There are many verses that establish Krishna as the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhava mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Isavasyam medam sarvam yat kincha jagatam jagat tena chaktena bunjita magrita kasya sridhanam. So everything comes from Krishna. Ishvaraha parama Krishna sachit ananda vigraha anadi adi govinda sava karana karanam. He is the cause of everything, the source of everything. Everything emanates from him. What's that? Ekadesha stitas jagya jyotsna vistarini yata. I think I can remember the rest of it. Just as a fire is situated in one place in the room, but its presence is felt by the heat and light that emanates throughout the room. So similarly also Krishna, whilst he resides in the spiritual realm, he's nevertheless a source of everything, and his energies pervade the whole creation. So it's all his, all belongs to him. We belong to him too, actually, but we're in a bit of confusion about who we are. A little bit of disorientation. So especially that Isavasya verse. Isavasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagatam jagat. Everything animate and inanimate within the creation is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. But however, we should recognize that whilst Krishna is the owner and the controller, at the same time, he gives everybody their quota for existence according to their karma, according to their piety or impiety. Then everybody is given a certain quota or facility to utilize. And the appropriate utilization of that quota is to use it for making spiritual advancement. This is the real purpose. The real purpose of any kind of facility is so that we can make progress in understanding our real identity, in working according to that relationship or those relationships, those sets of relationships, and then ultimately coming to the point of self-realization. So it mentions in the Bhagavatam that material facility shouldn't be used for sense gratification, but rather one should accept one's quota in a way that one can provide for one's basic requirements. You know, one needs a certain amount of sleep, you need to eat a certain amount, you need a certain amount of recreation, you need to do a certain amount of work. So it's, you know, it's not that one can't utilize the facilities that are given or provided according to one's quota. But one who wants to make progress in spiritual life is recommended to accept things in a orderly fashion, in a regulated fashion, in a way that doesn't. I think the battery that we had in before was better than the one that you've just put in. Huh? It's a new battery. Well, it's an old battery now. Ultra charge. Right. Yeah. Well, remind me not to buy that brand. It says here Super Heavy Duty.
Super. Sounds like it.
I don't think this is going to work. There you go, that's a better. Yeah, these are good. These I can, I've used these before. If they're charged up, they're good. What is it? Yukta hara viharasya, yukta svapna vabodasya, yukta kama sachetasu, yogo bhavati dukkaha. Krishna recommends in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that we have a regulated lifestyle and regulated eating, regulated sleeping, regulated activities, some recreation. You know, it's not that we have to work all the time, but we also have some relaxation and sleeping, wakefulness. These things have to be moderate, if you like, in order to satisfy our material requirements. The body needs, you know, we need to satisfy the body. And of course, the body's been given to us as a facility. So, material necessities are provided as a quota for each person. Each person is given a quota. But, at the same time, and the point being made here by the Avanti Brahmana is that one shouldn't become too absorbed. Rupa Goswami says, atyahara prayasascha. Too much collection, too much eating, to over-endeavour for material things that are difficult to achieve. Prajalpa. And well, this is what happens. When one becomes totally absorbed in pursuing material things, that's all he thinks about. And so then consequently what happens? That's all he talks about too. Prajalpa. And then, you know, the more prajalpa, well, Prabhupada mentions, you know, it's like the croaking of frogs. One will then, one's consciousness will be absorbed in material things, and then the snake of death will gobble you up, and then, what happens? Another birth in the material world. Without making any spiritual progress. So, the idea is not that renunciation isn't that we try and give these things up completely and think that that's spiritual advancement. It may be. You know, there are examples of very, very elevated devotees like Raghunath Das and others, you know, who could live off of a few drops of buttermilk every second day. But the reason why they were able to do that was because of deep absorption in their siddha deha. They weren't thinking on the material platform that I'm his body. He was thinking on the eternal spiritual platform that I'm an eternal associate of Krishna. So he's completely absorbed in that consciousness, in that mood. And so his life force was his purely spiritual energy, really, spiritual focus. So for the ordinary person, these things need to be taken care of. Material facilities are not necessarily an obstacle to making advancement in spiritual life. They can be utilized. In fact, what's Rupa Goswami's suggestion? That we, what is it? I can't remember the word. Yukta vairagyam ucchate. Got the last line. Anyway. Prapanchikataya buddhya. Does anybody know that verse? No. from the Nectar Devotion, from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Basically, the principle is that because everything belongs to Krishna, we shouldn't think that it's ours necessarily. We are given a quota to utilize, but ultimately we utilize it for the purposes of the person who actually owns it or to whom it actually belongs. So material facilities rejected prematurely when they could actually be used for spiritual practice or for spiritual purposes is considered to be false renunciation, improper renunciation. Whereas the acceptance of those facilities and the utilization of them for the purposes of making spiritual advancement is true renunciation. So as is mentioned here in the purport, if you happen to be very wealthy or influential or however materially qualified, one can use that wealth. So there's some practical suggestions. If you're living in a luxurious mansion, then make that mansion a place where Krishna is worshipped, so that one's family members can become devotees, so one's friends can also be involved in devotional service. You know, Korma the Brahmana wanted to travel with Lord Chaitanya. He wanted to give up everything and live a life of renunciation, but Lord Chaitanya said, no, stay with your family, pursue your dharma, if you like, your occupational responsibilities, occupational duties, but whomever you meet, introduce them to Krishna, give them Krishna consciousness. Korma the Brahmin was thinking, I should renounce everything, leave home, leave my family, all of these obstacles to spiritual life, and I should just travel with Mahaprabhu. The Lord Chaitanya said, no, you will be with me constantly if you follow this instruction. That is, utilize your current situation, but take advantage of it to then give Krishna consciousness to others. So, mentioned here in the purport, one should give up all one's material property by utilizing it completely in the devotional service of the Lord. A person who owns a luxurious mansion should install the deity of the Lord and hold regular programs to propagate Krishna consciousness. So this is a practical application of one's facilities. If you're really wealthy, then build a temple. If you're really wealthy, build a temple. Then, mentioned here, publish books, distribute books. That was the instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, who was quite frustrated with the neophyte mentality of his disciples who were squabbling over the rooms in the Calcutta temple. And he said to Srila Prabhupada, you know, better that we tear down the marble and sell it to print books. Right? Do we have squabbles in the Brahmachari Ashram over who's going to have which room? No? Who's going to sleep on the top bunk? Generally, we don't have this problem. And it's very interesting, even though Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you know, better to sell the marble, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have temples. And you can see Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON, and what did he do? What was his prime focus in establishing the society all over the world? What did he do? Yeah, establish temples. But the temples are not just places for taking it easy, where the devotees just eat, sleep and have fun. But rather, they're places from which one can preach. That's the real utilization of the... You know, sometimes when people come to the temple and they look around and they see the marble and all the decorations and they say, well, you know, you're supposed to be renunciates. Why do you have such a opulent residence? Not understanding that the facility is ultimately here for the glorification of Krishna, that it belongs to Krishna, it's not ours. We just happen to be very fortunate servants of the Lord who happen to share. We're getting the benefits of Salokya Salokya Mukti, right? You happen to live in the same planet of the Lord, then you get the same facilities. So we live with Radha Vallabhara and we share his facilities. We don't think it's ours as such. Although it's not bad to think of the temple as one's own, just as one thinks of Krishna as one's own. One's service is to Krishna is one's own. This is the mood of Mammata. Krishna is mine. Although we do have to be careful about, you know, we have to be careful. This is very advanced, actually, Mammata, that Krishna is mine. But certainly the devotees share the opulence of Krishna. Krishna is he's Sarva Karana Karanam, he's the source of everything. So, you know, he is Bhagavan, which means he possesses all opulence. So he also shares that opulence with his devotees. But of course the devotees don't take advantage of it in a materialistic sense. It's because it mentions here that which one intends to use for one's personal sense of gratification is called material property. So the distinction is, you know, property, when the motivation or the impetus for action is to enjoy it, that's material, when we're trying to enjoy it for ourselves. But when that property is taken and utilized for Krishna's service, then it becomes spiritual. Just like we were reading last night in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's earth, there's water, there's fire, there's ether in the spiritual world. But it describes how they're not material elements. Right? But still they're there. Chintamani prakara sadmasu kalpa vriksha. So there are, you know, in the spiritual realm, there's still earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. Mind, intelligence. Only it's spiritualized. So it's utilized for Krishna. It's all geared and focused for Krishna's pleasure. And then, of course, automatically then the devotees enjoy. So this idea of renunciation is that one understands to whom everything belongs. You know, I mentioned many times, what is it, the verse, idam Krishnaya idam namama, when they do the pujas in Mayapur, they chant that mantra at the end of each oblation, idam Krishnaya idam namama, this is for Krishna, it is not for me. That's the, you know, the underlying principle. Because sometimes we forget this. Forgetfulness is one of the because the living energy, Jiva Shakti, is Tatashta. I was just listening to a lecture this morning, Prabhupada was saying, we're Jiva Shakti, which means Tatashta Shakti, which means marginal, which means we can be influenced by the material or we can be influenced by the spiritual. This is our position. When we're influenced by the material energy, then we're thinking of enjoying things for ourselves. Our motivation for action, our motivation for service even is often based on, you know, what's in it for me. Am I going to enjoy out of this or not? Am I going to get something out of it or not? But real renunciation means, you know, that I do it for Krishna's pleasure. Whether I enjoy or not is secondary. My enjoyment and suffering is already preordained anyway by the laws of karma. It's already, you know, the amount of suffering and the amount of enjoyment that we're going to get is already worked out for us. So no point in endeavouring further for material things. I'm still going to, whatever happens, I'm still going to enjoy and suffer according to my quota. So, the final point here is, you know, just blindly renouncing things. Also, this is not good. You know, just giving things up, it's all material, won't have anything to do with it. Is immature. One should accept those things, knowing well to whom they belong. It belongs to Krishna, so therefore I should use it in Krishna's service. That's proper utilization, proper renunciation. So, you know, in one sense we should be neither attached, which means, you know, attached to things and want to possess them, thinking that I can enjoy them, and neither should we be detached, saying, no, I don't want it anymore. It's not mine. Mm-hmm. You don't own it anyway, actually. This is, you know, probably gives the example of the bank teller renouncing all of the money in the bank. I renounce this money. Well, as Prabhupada points out, it's not your money anyway. So what are you trying to renounce all of the money? Neither should you steal it either. Right? But you're allowed to use the money appropriately according to the rules of the bank. And they also give you your pay at the end of the week. So that's yours. You can have that. So the question that's being posed in the verse is who or which person, what person will become attached to the abode of worthlessness, material property? What kind of a person? Thinking that, you know, it belongs to me. This is foolishness. But rather, the devotees become attached. We do become attached, actually, to our property. You know, Prabhupada gave the example, you know, this is my watch, and if you want to take it from me, then I'll fight you for it. Huh? Because I'm using it in Krishna's service. And so therefore it has some value. Not that we can just say, oh, you know, it all belongs to Krishna, and I'll take it. But rather, you know, we do value what we have, and we protect it because ultimately we can use it. We are using it in Krishna's service. But not that we're attached to it because, you know, we want to enjoy it for our own sake. You know, that can be quite bewildering for some people. Prabhupada fought like anything to get some land in Juhu. Right? He really fought for that land. And people might say, what are you fighting for this land for? Just a piece of land. That's just, the Bhagavatam says, why are they attached to material things? But Prabhupada didn't see that as a material thing. He saw that as being Krishna's property, and so therefore it should be protected for Krishna's service. Whereas, you know, the owner of the land, he was hanging on to it for personal reasons. To his detriment in the end. So who will be, you know, only a fool I guess that's the answer to the question, is only a fool becomes attached to material things and thinks that by possessing them and holding on to them that they can become happy or satisfied. Because ultimately any material facility, any material benefit that we get will all be taken away from us. While we have it and we can engage it in Krishna's service, then it is useful, but ultimately hanging on to things and accumulating things, this is atyahara prayasascha, over endeavor and over collecting, you know, for material things. Waste of time. And we'll just confuse. Or, you know, renouncing things falsely. That's the sour grapes. You know the story of the fox saw the grapes and he wanted to grab the grapes. And they were too high. Couldn't get them. So he said, sour anyway. I don't want them. It's not that you don't want them, you can't have them. They're not yours. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Dave.
How do we determine what our quota is?
Good question. Sometimes it's determined for us, as, you know, by dint of our karma, right? Most of us don't have a problem deciding whether how much wealth we should, you know, manage. Anybody here got a problem with having too much money? Please raise your hands. Got too much money? Okay, all right. Well, you're very fortunate in that sense. If you have a difficulty working out then how much you should engage in Krishna service and how much should you, you know, how much do you require for your own purposes? But generally, you know, we look at our ashram, we look at our varna, our occupation, and one of the reasons why it's recommended that one has a spiritual master, spiritual shelter, siksha, is so that we can be guided by those who are more advanced than ourselves and who can help us, you know, determine what do I need? And you know, you see that Prabhupada gives the example of Sanatan, Rupa Goswami, how they divided up their wealth. You know, certain portion was kept for personal maintenance, portions kept for family maintenance, portion provided for the future, for health, you know, for putting money aside for future emergencies. And then, you know, then a portion put aside for propagating Krishna consciousness, you know, for helping preach. So each person, you know, if you have a family, you've got family responsibilities. So your the quota for them may be bigger. If you're a single person and you don't have so many needs, then your quota for maintaining yourself is less. And so then what you put aside for personal use in the future is determined by, you know, how big your family is, and, you know, how many responsibilities you have, how much property you've got. So all of these things, you know, it's very personal, it's very individual, and it requires a little bit of analysis. And then apportioning things according to your personal requirements. So that's usually done with the help of your spiritual master. The spiritual master is basically the person who is able to guide us, who we have faith in, and who's able to guide us in practical day-to-day affairs. But, you know, what's that rule of thumb? What's the rule of thumb that Prabhupada said? Half should be given for preaching Krishna consciousness. This is Prabhupada's formula. Then a certain amount quarter, say, put aside for emergencies in the future. Then 25% spend on yourself and your family. There's a rough formula that Prabhupada gives.
Yeah, I'm thinking, how much do you endeavour to get that quota?
How much should you endeavour? As much as...
You go to work 40 hours a week to achieve that quota?
That's...
Get back to wanting that quota.
Well, that's going to be determined again by your ashram. If you're married and got a family and your kids are going to school, that's a huge responsibility. It takes up most people's full-time, effort and endeavour.
Like being able to maintain things.
Ask the householders here. There's no householders here, apart from Ghana, who are really working. They're all off going to work now. Right? You've got the day off. Yeah, I figured that. Otherwise you'd be at work too. But it's a big responsibility. He's got children going to school. He and his wife work. Right? You got to maintain yourselves. That's not so difficult. But then with the kids, it's uniforms, books, school fees, recreational activities on the weekend. I used to think my dad was made of money. I couldn't work out why he wouldn't give me all of the money that he had. But the fact of the matter is, he's busy paying the bills, paying the school fees, getting the uniforms, just basically maintaining everything. It's hard work.
With the household, there's three things a person should act on: seize, theft, and buy. So with the household, it normally works because he's avoiding the debt factor.
The debt,
So that's why basically we're working.
Debt
is a mundane thing, but debt comes into the equation, so we work to be free from those debts.
Yeah. Gas, electricity, rates, rent, whatever. Any other comments? Questions? Mark Majid.
And what about the sickness when you were saying, think of Mr. Land in Yuhu, in Bombay?
Yeah.
How positive he was. He didn't want to give the land in spite of getting the money. He was cheating the Hare Krishna devotees.
Yeah.
Prabhupada.
Yeah, trying to, anyway. He nearly succeeded, actually. What is she?
Prabhu, we were speaking about that karma. It is destined that by karma that we know how much we enjoy in this lifetime and how much we suffer in this lifetime.
Yes.
But, when we become devotees, then how does karma work in that way? Like, when we start to become a devotee, like for myself, I've become a devotee in the middle of my life. I feel really sometimes, when children take up Krishna consciousness at a very early age, I feel like I'm really unfortunate in that sense, like sort of I should have lost so much of years to pass by before I became a devotee, and now the family is here, I can't concentrate more on my emotional service rather than I have to work and support the family, that's it. And how does karma take care of us when we are how does it work further for us?
How does it work?
How does Krishna take care of us?
How does Krishna take care of your karma? He burns it up. I said he burns it up. You chant Hare Krishna, you see the deities, you take prasad, you're just burning up all of your karma, good and bad. So how does he do that? It's said that Krishna's lotus feet are very, very soft. Right? Very, very soft. But at the same time, also, they're as hard as a thunderbolt. This is in the Bhagavatam. Because, you know, nobody wants to be kicked by Krishna's feet. Or maybe we do. But it is described how if we meditate on Krishna's lotus feet, then that meditation is so powerful that they are likened to a thunderbolt that can destroy mountains of material impiety and piety for that matter. Like a thunderbolt can destroy the top of a mountain, blow it apart. So similarly also, Krishna's lotus feet, when we meditate on them, they're so powerful. So effectively, when we engage in devotional service and we're meditating on Krishna, Prabhupada says, you know, when we're meditating on Krishna, that doesn't mean Krishna alone, but it means Krishna and his entourage, his devotees, his service, his temple, everything related to Krishna has some spiritual potency. So when we're meditating on Krishna and Krishna's service, then that meditation is very powerful. When we chant Hare Krishna, describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you know, we're chanting Hare Krishna, it has the potency to destroy more sinful reactions than we can create. So, you know, Krishna burns up our karma. And Prabhupada gives the example, Rupa Goswami gives the, I think Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, it's like a fan. You have a fan plugged in and switched on, then it's whirling around. And so our activities, impious or even pious activities, are providing the energy to keep the fan of our karma spinning, right? But then when you engage in devotional service, that's like switching off the fan. So the fan may still be spinning, but it's gradually slowing down. Right? So we're still getting Prarabdha karma, which means, you know, karma that is allotted to us and that we're experiencing right now. Right? Our karma is the body that we've got, the health that we get, the family that we, you know, the income, that all of these things, that's our karma that we're getting right now. And, you know, our devotional service is gradually purifying us so that the karma or the reactions that are lying as bij or as kuta, you know, some are lying in seed form, we're unconscious of them. Some of them are lying within the heart as subtle desires, subtle they're getting burnt up by the power of our devotional service. So that's why it's recommended sticking to keeping the fire of devotional service, because it burns up these subtle and even these desires that are lying in a seed form within our heart. And they become then the impetus for more sinful activities, which then creates more reactions for us. So, devotional service, if we remain in the fire of devotional service, then it burns up these subtle impetus, or this subtle impetus, if you like, these subtle impressions that push us. So, from the external platform, it appears as if we're still getting our karma. Right. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in the Bhagavatam that actually, even though it looks like we're getting our karma, actually that karma is not coming from the material energy, from Maya, but actually it is being orchestrated by Krishna, and we're just getting a facsimile or a reaction for our past deeds under the auspices of Krishna. So it's actually coming. The reactions are actually coming. Now, why do devotees get reactions? because we're engaged in devotional service and we've dedicated our lives to serving Krishna, so one might think, well, why do the devotees have to get reactions? Because they've dedicated themselves to serving Krishna, they should be released. But because we're still tinged by the desire to still enjoy, there's still a residual that needs to be purified. That's why we have to remain in the fire of devotional service. Because of that residual, therefore, the devotees are given token reactions just to remind them, don't get too enamored by the material world. It is not a place of enjoyment. So, you know, we get smacked. Oh, don't do it. No? So, effectively, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, when we're doing rendering service, then we're becoming purified. Right? But we're still going to get, you know, the prarabdha karma will still come until we leave this body. Right? But be sure, and the reactions that we're getting, they're actually not material reactions. They're actually reactions coming about as an arrangement by Krishna. Right? So, you know, our material, so-called material success as devotees is actually ultimately being orchestrated and coordinated by Krishna. Now, how does he do that? I don't know. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says it's very difficult to understand the intricacies of action. Right? And you don't know what you did in your last life, and you know what, it's, we can't work out, you know, today you know, as an example, I might be driving down the road and then somebody hits my car. So I don't know what that's, you know, what is that reaction? Why did that happen? What did I do? It's too far in the past, and who knows, it's too confused to be able to work out. Why am I getting this now? But ultimately we understand it is ultimately been orchestrated by superior forces, Devi Higesha Gunamayi, ultimately that's being orchestrated by Krishna. For the non-devotees, that's Maya or Durga. But for the devotees, actually it's Krishna and Krishna's internal energy that's working on the devotees. It's not material, they're not material reactions. They're for our advancement, for our benefit, ultimately. Does that make sense? So yeah, it's a bit, our happiness and distress is predetermined. Huh? There's not a lot we can do about it. We like to think that we're in charge, but we're not. Okay, Kantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktavinoda Ki Jai.